Coming up on Tech News Today, are any of Samsung's 1,000 new products any good? Why encryption makes you suspicious to the NSA? And Microsoft and France take on Amazon. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, June 21st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at Gazelle.com. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT6. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put some context around them for padding, and we start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Samsung vomited every conceivable form factor on stage in London on Thursday. Among the menagerie was the Ative Q, a hybrid tablet laptop that can run Windows 8 and Android. There's also the Galaxy NX mirrorless camera that runs Android. No phone in that one. An ultrabook called the Ative Book 9, both Lite and Plus models, which run Windows 8. Add to that the Ative Tab 3 Windows tablet, an all-in-one Windows PC called the Ative 1 5. Yeah, two numbers there. And since they didn't have any extra time, they also showed off previously announced Samsung Galaxy S4 Active, the S4 Zoom, and the S4 Mini. Those are phones.
Judges have signed off on broad orders which allow the NSA to collect information inadvertently collected from domestic U.S. communications without a warrant. The Guardian has published full two top-secret documents submitted to the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, known as the FISA Court, signed by Attorney General Eric Holder, which detail the procedures the NSA is required to follow target non-U.S. persons under its foreign intelligence powers, and what the agency does to minimize data collected on U.S. citizens and residents in the course of that surveillance.
In case you forgot, Apple and Samsung are still suing each other all over the world. A new ruling from a Tokyo court says that Samsung did infringe on Apple's bounce-back patent on earlier models of its phones. So what effect will this have on your Galaxy S, XYZ, Mini, whatchamacallit? Well, pretty much nothing, as Samsung has already designed around this by using a blue line instead of rubber banding on its phones.
Oh, good. Apple's ebook fate is now in a judge's hands. The U.S. Department of Justice and Apple made their closing arguments Thursday in front of Judge Denise Coate of the U.S. Southern District of New York in Manhattan. The DOJ brought the case against Apple and five publishers, alleging conspiracy to limit price competition and raise prices in the ebook market. The five publishers settled out of court. Apple went ahead with the trial.
Speaking of Apple, Apple's fragmented. Oh, no. What will we do? Well, if you're a developer, you really only have to worry about the latest operating system. Just 1% of Apple's App Store visitors still use a version older than iOS 5, which, of course, was released back in October 2011. And only 6% are still using last year's iOS 5, which is the last version supported by the original iPad and 2009 iPod Touch. Apple also expects that adoption of iOS 7 will follow a quick pace of the previous releases, due in large part to the company's efforts to upgrade users and prepare developers for that update.
No Apple pie chart jokes there. The UK Information Commissioner's Office has told Google it has 35 days to delete any data Google mistakenly collected while gathering Street View information, or Google will face criminal charges. The ICO did not impose any fines on Google. Google said, forget you, we're not doing anything. Well, they didn't say that. They said they're going to work with the agency and delete the data.
Delete the data or keep the data? They seem to get mixed messages there. U.S. Representative Zoe Lofgren and Senator Ron Wyden co-authored a column in Wired today introducing Aaron's Law. The proposed legislation is named after Aaron Swartz, who killed himself in January after facing felony charges under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Aaron's Law attempts to bring more balance and proportionality to the CFAA and establish that mere breaches of terms of service or employment contracts should not trigger automatic violations of the CFAA.
I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. Let's start with the bad news first. A Federal Aviation Administration advisory panel weighing whether to ease up restrictions on the use of personal technology devices in flight, like Kindles and e-readers and iPads and all that stuff, has delayed its recommendations by 2 months until late September. This is according to the FAA. The good news is that this delay comes at the same time as reports that advisors are expected to recommend the agency relax its guidelines and allow passengers to use more personal electronics on flights.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'm glad you finished with the good news. Another new Apple product, another new Wi-Fi issue. Gizmodo reports, and Ars Technica passes along, that many people in Apple's discussion forums complain that the new MacBook Air often drops their Wi-Fi connection, sometimes after a few minutes. And some people are requiring a reboot to reconnect it. Other users, including Ars Technica's own staff, have experienced no trouble at all. Gizmodo speculates the problem might relate to the new 802.11ac antenna for the MacBook Air being inside the Air's plastic hinge. So when you set it on the desk, it doesn't work very good.
Lenovo quietly introduced a bunch of new hardware. The most interesting is a 10.1-inch Lenovo mixed tablet with a keyboard cover. It runs Windows 8 on an Intel Atom processor. It costs $500, and Lenovo says you'll get 10 hours of battery life. Lenovo also introduced some additions to its IdeaPad S series and U series. Prices for those new laptops range from $429 to $899. The devices will launch in July and August.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want the new Samsung Galaxy NX camera, the new Samsung Ativ 3, the new Samsung Ativ? I can't remember them all. Do you want new gadgets? That's what I'm really trying to say. Maybe it's an iPhone or an HTC One. No matter what you want, you need some cash, right? And where are you going to get quick cash? No, don't do that. That's illegal. Do this. It's hassle-free and totally legal. Sell your old gadgets to Gazelle. Before you upgrade, make sure you sell your used stuff. You can go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. From right where you are, find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Seriously, get a risk-free offer for your gadgets. Lock it in for 30 days. You've got 30 days from the moment they give you a quote to send them the device. And the quote is good. Whatever they tell you they're going to pay you, that's what they'll pay you. It doesn't go down over time. Even though it probably should, they don't do that. They're like, we gave you a price. That price is good for 30 days. And then once they get the device, you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. Gazelle's now buying back a larger selection of tablets, too. In addition to the iPad, you can now sell to Gazelle select Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets. So do it right now. Go to gazelle.com. Get an offer for your Samsung products. It's easy, free shipping. Most items qualify for a free box. If you're lazy like me, we'll even send you the box. And fast processing, no listing hassles. Take your iPhone, your Samsung, your other Android smartphone, or maybe your tablet. Find out what it's worth at gazelle.com. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining me today, as he does often on the Fridays, Mr. Darren Kitchen from hack5.org. That looks like my house, Darren.
Oh, you didn't want me to hack into your house? I told you I was hacking across Hollywood.
Oh, you did say you're hacking across America and LA in particular. So I guess I should have expected. Is it comfy up there? Do you need anything? Can I get
it
you?
It is comfy, yeah. And thanks for the Wi-Fi key. I'm having lots of fun here.
I didn't give you the Wi-Fi. Anyway, always great to have Darren Kitchen on Friday. All kidding aside, Hack Across America going on. He's in LA for that. That's happening tomorrow. We'll talk a little more about all that good stuff a little later in the show. Let's start off by talking about the parade of gadgets a la Samsung.
You got away with words. First, Samsung vomited it up. Now it's a parade. I'm not sure exactly how they presented it. I think it was a big press event.
A parade of vomit.
Yes, a parade of vomit from Samsung yesterday, and they released a bunch of tablets and books and whatever you want to call them. So let's talk about some of the major ones. The Ativ Book 9 Plus, a 13-inch ultrabook with a 3200 by 1800 display. Samsung says it's thinner than the MacBook Air. It gets 12 hours of battery life. And Vlad Sabov at The Verge says the device has great build quality. It's made out of aluminum. The Ativ Q is this weird slider laptop that runs Android 4.2.2 and Windows 8. It also has a 13.3-inch screen with a 3200 by 1800 display. So some crazy resolutions here. Weighs 2.84 pounds. Comes with an S Pen if you want that. And The Verge says the device appears to virtualize Android. You launch Android from within Windows 8. But you can't
it's
just
like
run
a BlueStacks thing, then, I guess?
It doesn't run them at the same time, so you can't snap an Android application on the left or the right or any of that. It's just you switch modes. So it's their own implementation of that. On the tablet front, there's the Tab 3, a 10.1-inch slate. This thing is not very impressive, other than the fact it comes with Office 2013 pre-installed. There's this little desktop, the Ativ 1.5, as Tom mentioned. It's the O-N-E, so and then the number 5. It's not the 15, so it's the 1.5. Really thin, 21.5-inch, all-in-one PC, 1080p display, 4 gigabytes of memory, up to a terabyte of storage, quad-core AMD processor. And then again, Samsung wanted to do something else with cameras. Android-powered Galaxy NX mirrorless camera runs Android 4.2.2, comes with 3G and LTE radios, 20.3-megapixel sensor, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, 4.8-inch touchscreen on the back. So it's a massive touchscreen on the back. 13 compatible lenses from Samsung for the device, but pricing and availability was not mentioned at all. So this looks like a DSLR. It's not really a DSLR. It's a mirrorless device. Does any of these devices turn anybody's heads?
I think the camera's kind of cool.
Yes. I want the camera.
Yeah.
I want the camera and I want them all. But, I mean, these are all making it to my Technolust list. The camera, the last camera that they came out with, I thought was novel. But now with LTE and 3G connectivity, suddenly it's epic. I want that.
I don't want any of these, I don't think. The Ativ Q is the one that made me look, because I have been a sucker for the multiple operating systems since time immemorial. Since they first were emulating Windows 3.1 on a Mac, I thought that was crazy. I don't think this is good, though. And in fact, I talked about this a little on British Tech Mac or British Tech Network yesterday. Is this an insult to Microsoft to be like, okay, we've got a tablet, laptop hybrid. And what is Windows 8 meant to be? Working well on a tablet or a laptop? And Samsung says, great, we're going to put Android on here for the tablet, because you know what? Windows 8 kind of crappy on a tablet. It seems like that's what it's saying to me.
You don't think that's an insult to Google as well with Android?
No, because Android doesn't pretend to be a laptop operating system. They're like, we're for mobile devices, phones and tablets.
But doesn't that kind of marginalize Android in such a way? I mean, sure, we've seen things before, you know, with virtual machine, like Java. Anything that runs in Java is a Java virtual machine. But this is basically saying like, oh, Android apps, yeah, you just run the Android virtual machine.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Any operating system can be a virtual machine. I think what it's saying is, if you want to use a tablet, you really ought to use Android, not Windows, because Windows just is sucky at that. And I also don't even know what the point of this gadget is, right? Like, why do I need two operating
systems? Because a Samsung device or that other, I can't remember what other company did this, but this device will have more apps than anybody else's PC. Isn't that the gimmick? It's like, when you get the Samsung Ativ Q, you'd not only get everything you get from Windows and everything you get from Android, but you get them both. So you're getting but something like 600,000 apps as opposed to whatever the number is at the Windows store.
BlueStacks would be better for that, though, because it's actually virtualizing, mm-hmm. and I can run the apps in Windows and have, you know, actually true multitasking. That might actually get me excited.
Right, so nobody really cares about the laptops or tablets. The camera, though.
I mean, you mentioned, you know, Android. I mean, the Samsung Galaxy NX camera would be running the same version of Android that the Ativ Q would be. And it's a mirrorless camera, which is a nice camera. It has LTE built in. I mean, talk about clunky cameras that are also, you know, phones type of a thing. I mean, besides the fact that it's not a phone, it's like, this is an Android smart device that's also a very souped up camera. I love this.
I'm very curious about the camera as well, because this is like a gateway drug to interlace.
You put the right apps on there and, you know, I mean,
exactly.
Suddenly Instagram gets, I don't know, more serious. You know, things like streaming applications where you're like, oh, if only I had all of this process, and then it's like, wait, but this does all of it.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of flies in the face of everyone saying, well, dedicated cameras for, you know, sort of that prosumer market are dying because everybody can do this with apps on their phones. Something like this is, yes, it's a little bit more for a photo enthusiast. Not everybody's going to want something that's bulkier that has interchangeable lenses. But for those who do, it's perfect because you don't necessarily have to have a smart device in your purse or your pocket along with your camera.
Yeah. What I like is I was actually just up in Seattle talking to these guys over at Streambox about their solutions where it's like, you know, very ridiculously expensive things for broadcast engineers to clip on to the backs of their, you know, studio cameras or their ENG cameras and take it out to the field with crazy service plans and all of these things just to be able to like stream video. And you look at this and you're like, oh, so you open it up, you boot it up out of the box, you download like Ustream or YouTube Live or one of those, and then suddenly it's one device.
All right, let's move on to a less fun topic than a parade of vomit. It is the NSA and the Guardian still releasing documents that they probably got from their favorite whistleblower. The new docs detail stringent steps to identify U.S. citizens and destroy those records. The docs are actually meant to be guidelines to say, here's how you identify the stuff you shouldn't have collected. When you're doing bulk collection, they actually have a database of your phone numbers and addresses and email addresses that is used, according to this document, secret document, to strip out all of the U.S. citizens. And they do that in all cases except, and here's where it gets interesting. The exception is retain and make use of, quote, inadvertently acquired domestic communications if they contain usable intelligence, information on criminal activity, threat of harm to people or property, are encrypted or are believed to contain any information relevant to cybersecurity. Now, a lot of that stuff we could argue like, oh, if it's broadly interpreted, that means they could keep everything. And that's a good point. But the are encrypted is the part I want to focus on here. If a location is unknown for someone, they are allowed to treat that person as if they are not from the U.S. and not in the U.S. Cryptography means they won't know where the information is originating from. In the context, this is from the document again, in the context of a cryptanalytic effort, maintenance of technical databases requires retention of all communication that are enciphered or reasonably believed to contain secret meaning and sufficient duration may consist of any period of time. So in other words, if it's encrypted or they think it's steganography because they don't understand it, they get to keep it forever. They target using specific types of cryptology or steganography that are extensively used by individuals associated with a foreign power or foreign territory. PGP, Tor, anything that's used widely, that means that your communication is going to be stored. Now, it's encrypted, which is why you encrypted in the first place. So, Darren, it's kind of a catch-22. If you want to protect yourself from surveillance, you encrypt your message, but that means that the encrypted message is going to be stored possibly long enough for them to figure out how to crack it.
Well, I mean, that is the idea, actually, this is why there's a giant data center being built in Utah. The idea is, sure, you may not be able to crack it today, but it's really cheap to store it. Have you seen the prices of hard drives? When you're the government buying them in bulk, go ahead and just store everything, because eventually, one day, you will be able to crack it, and you will know all those secrets, and perhaps they will provide intelligence that will lead to some other awesome thing. But in the meantime, yes, you're right. If you are a privacy aware person and actually using, you know, Tor, PGP, all TrueCrypt, any of these things to, you know, keep your stuff confidential, you're actually kind of putting yourself out there as, you know, because suddenly that's an indication that, oh, you must have something to hide. You know, and I think it's scary in that sense, because then, you know, to anybody else, like thinking about, oh, maybe I should, with all of this Prism stuff, start thinking about protecting myself and, you know, being more privacy conscious. Suddenly it's like, oh, but I don't want to out myself as having any involvement with those. You know, I have nothing to hide. I'm not going to even touch that. Encryption, that's for criminals. That's the kind of mindset we can't have.
Are we assuming that something like Tor and PGP, it's just a matter of time before the stuff gets cracked, that right now we just don't have the tools?
Yes.
Okay.
That's absolutely the case. I mean, 10 years ago, DES was the standard, and then the EFF proved that could be cracked in like minutes, and then we got 3 DES, which is like DES 3 times. Anyway, it's the perpetual thing. Encryption is never a bulletproof solution. All you're ever doing is buying time. And a lot of experts would say at any given point in time that whatever the best is today will give you about 10 years.
And granted, in 10 years, you may not care if they look at your encrypted content anymore. And likely under these guidelines, if they were still in existence, they would see, oh, this does not contain any of the things that require us to investigate. And so therefore, we're bound to destroy it. I think it's just it's sort of the irony of, oh, if I protect myself, then that means I'm going to get stored. But I put it to you before we get off of this. If you were in the position of the investigator and you've been given legal authority to collect information and you can't see who it's from, what it's about, Shouldn't you keep it? Doesn't that make it suspicious?
No, I don't think at all. I mean, but then again, I'm of the belief, I'm a little bit of a crypto anarchist in that I think that everybody should be encrypting everything from their cat photos to, you know, all of their secrets. And, Dual Core or 80 from Dual Core, the nerdcore rapper, has a really cool anti-forensics stuff that he does. I think it's kind of the best solution in that it's all signal to noise. He has a tool that fills his entire hard drive with, you know, tens of thousands of encrypted volumes. And so it becomes a needle in a haystack. So, yeah.
Well,
that's just
like
me.
You said, storage is cheap, and they've got a big place in Utah for it. So,
yeah.
Let's lighten the mood a little bit and talk about Instagram. Now, Instagram's new video, Sarah, is 15 seconds. Do we think we know why now?
Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned that. I mean, it's 15 seconds maximum, so you could upload something that's shorter than 15 seconds, but a lot of people are basically saying, oh, I got 15 seconds, I'll do that. Yesterday, my feed was overwhelmingly 15-second videos of various things. And I felt, gosh, these really seem long. Why do they seem so long? An article over at Quartz points out 15-second videos are the same type of videos that you see in advertising all the time. 15-second videos, you know, there'll be like a large advertising campaign that gets put together for television. I mean, it's a 15-second spot. You say, this is Facebook's grand plan to basically buy into that whole ad buy market that mobile and certainly even the internet is still trying to get into, because if an advertiser puts together a big spread for TV, then it's that much more attractive to then throw some money on the web because you don't have to redo your ads. You've basically got the commercials already in place. Earlier this week, reports came out that Facebook was delaying their video ads, which is sort of inevitable for the Facebook platform in general, because the company wanted to launch other services that were concurrent with video ads. This is according to Ad Age. Now, you might say, nobody said anything about Instagram videos being ads, but it does kind of make sense, especially since Instagram, we're still waiting for it to get monetized, and you know, it seems like this would make a lot of sense. The Quartz article also points to, you know, a lot of things that people saw as one of the first examples of Instagram video at the announcement at Facebook headquarters yesterday was an ad for Lululemon, which is like a workout clothing apparel company for women. Then at the same time, Facebook is known for copying stuff that is popular. We could say that Instagram is copying Vine because Vine is popular, the same way that Facebook Poke was copying Snapchat. None of those services really seem like huge hits for Facebook, though. So I wonder, I mean, is this another kind of like Facebook saying Me Too dud that is just clunking up Instagram that was great as it was?
As great as it was, that's an interesting phrase, I guess, for Instagram at all. But I'm just kind of, the videos don't autoplay on Instagram, do they?
They do by default, but you can turn that off in settings, which okay. I have. The problem is, though, is that because you can set that cover photo, it's like, before they play, haven't I already seen the best part?
Right.
You know? I don't want to see the other 15 seconds.
It's definitely Facebook thinking intelligently. They want to make money on everything they're doing. They paid $1 billion for Instagram, which was making no money, had a very loyal user base. Expanded user base with Android, and if millions and millions of people are using this service, Facebook needs to make money on it. And if they're going to be able to sneak ads in there, that's probably pretty brilliant, because you might just scrub by and you go, hey, that's pretty cool. And I would imagine the style of videos we're going to get in there will be the artful, filtered versions. So you might not even notice it's from a sponsor. The question is, how will they delineate it? Will it be like a yellow box around it? Will there be anything special that says it's an ad or sponsored or like, we thought you'd like this based on your profile?
Right.
That's the
something that sits at the atop of your feed every time you open it type of a thing.
Yeah.
Horrible, right? I mean, yeah. I hate the idea of that, but I already hate videos being in Instagram at all. It's like, I want two tabbed experiences. Like, let me tab over to the videos if I feel like it. But otherwise, it's completely destroyed the cadence for me.
Well, I guess they could do what Twitter does and make sure that they only put ads in your feed when they have a high confidence that it's relevant based on who else you're following. But you can't really do as good of an analysis of photos and videos as you can of text. I guess it's just all based on followers. So then it might be okay. I would be okay with if it's like, hey, follow Coca-Cola on Instagram and you'll get these amazing little 15-second vignettes. But I just don't know. Maybe I lack imagination. I'm having a hard time picturing what 15-second video content that isn't from someone I know would be compelling enough for me to want to follow an account.
Especially, yeah, if it's some sort of a branded account.
It could be something like, I'm thinking like Amazon Gold Box deals, those things that pop up and you click them and you move towards that website. That would be the real way to do it, I would think. It's not just going to be like an ad for like brand awareness. It'd be something you could act on right now, I'd imagine. Or maybe it'd be ads for cameras because you're on Instagram. Maybe you care about that.
The Galaxy NX.
I don't know. New Instagram.
I just say they're missing the boat. I mean, animated GIFs is where it's at. They should just
do that. Vine. That's what Vine's for. So Vine is for Darren Kitchen. Instagram is for not Darren Kitchen. Not sure who.
All right.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for tech news today, Shutterstock.com. If you're talking about making video or you're talking about making a website or a brochure, any kind of creative project that needs images or video, you got to check out Shutterstock. They have over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips to make your creative project perfect. In fact, they're adding new stuff every day, 10,000 images a day. Every time you visit, you're going to find something new. And they're not just going and finding 10,000 of anything out there. They've got contributors who are pro photographers and artists. They review each image individually for content and quality before adding it to the library. And you get the flexibility to choose how you want to buy them. It's not crazy expensive. And you could download 25 images a day with a standard subscription. Or a monthly subscription can get you a good deal. You download any image, any size, pay only one price, and use them legally. Shutterstock gives you the images you need to bring your creative projects to the next level. And they have something called Lightbox, which is cool because you can store stuff in the Lightbox. You can share that with other friends on Shutterstock or your coworkers and collaborate on what images are the right fit. Maybe you need the right colors. In fact, they've got a color search engine for that. So go try it out. Sign up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save those images to Lightbox to review later. And then once you find something you need and you're like, okay, I need to buy this, use the offer code TNT6 and check this out. New accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com. For 30% off new accounts, use offer code TNT6. We want to thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Go check it out. On to France and actually the United States. This is all about books. France Culture Minister Aurélie Filippetti says the government plans to investigate banning Amazon from discounting books and offering free delivery in France. She told the BFM News, I'm in favor of ending the possibility of offering both free delivery and a 5% discount. We need a law. So we're going to find a legislative window to introduce one. France bans retailers from offering greater than 5% discount from the publisher's price because they feel that's unfair to smaller booksellers. Guillaume Husson, spokesman for the SLF Book Retailers Union, says that Amazon must be losing money if they're offering a 5% discount and free delivery. And so this law is necessary, because they don't want Amazon undercutting virtually the price of other booksellers and driving them out of business. Nobody can compete with that. On the other side of the Atlantic, we've got that. We heard in the news views, we've got Apple in court for allegedly conspiring to limit price competition and doing exactly what France wants to happen, which is have everybody pretty much selling things at the same price. Again, Apple wanted to do this with the publishers to stop Amazon. Whether it was a conspiracy or not, the idea was Amazon selling stuff too cheaply. So on the one hand, you have the government of the United States fighting on the side of Amazon, and you have France fighting against Amazon. Amazon wants to sell the books cheaply. On the other side of the issue, independent booksellers, even big chain booksellers say, and publishers say, that is going to ruin the publishing industry. It's going to get rid of competition. Darren, now that you've got the lay of the land, are you on the France or the U.S. side?
Neither. No, I say that France should just keep being France. You are awesome at being France. Don't stop. I love you guys. And the United States, you guys are the best capitalists. You guys should just keep being the United States. But when it comes to the internet, you guys should just keep being the internet. You know, let the fair market decide. You know, books, sure. But e-books, now we're talking.
And it's all because of ebooks, right? Before you could easily buy books from anywhere in the world from your computer, this wasn't as big of a problem because you had to travel to do all of this comparison shopping. But now you can just do it from the click of a mouse.
This has affected so many different industries, and it's interesting to see how all of them have reacted, whether it's the music or the movie or TV or any of those. I mean, I remember just 10 years ago buying music in rubles because it was cheaper in Russia. It's like, dude, that's the market. That's the global economy. But if France wants to do that, they're more than welcome to. It's their nation, and then they get to make the rules.
They'll pay for it,
you know, later if it comes to, you know, if their citizens end up just buying their stuff outside of France.
Maybe the publisher's price could come down so that the consumer could win for once in France.
You just wanted
consumers
to see
consumers winning.
That's what Amazon wants, right? They just want the price to come down for you, Sarah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why France is in the pickle that it's in and why we've got lawmakers saying, we're just going to have to make up some legislation so that the prices don't get gouged so much that they go down, you know, more than 5% off the publisher's price. But you got to be really annoyed as somebody who's just trying to buy some books in France saying, okay, well, this wonderful company, you know, is no longer allowed to provide free shipping and things like that, which would make it attractive.
France come after Google over Google News and newspapers being put out of business, all this stuff? Like, does France have an issue with the U.S.-based companies that obviously are not paying a ton of tax to France? It seems like they just want to mess with the United States companies because they're not getting any money out of this.
Well, I don't know if that's true. If you operate in France, you have to pay tax in France, no? I know there's all this tax evasion stuff going on, but theoretically, you can't just say, oh, I'm in the U.S., so I don't pay tax.
Well, there was a question of whether Google was giving anything back to the newspapers by taking their content or scraping it. What was the big deal there? Google wasn't paying anything for that.
That wasn't so much about taxes per se, but about the French papers not making any money or having their content stolen, right?
Yeah. So I'm just wondering if there's just a general issue between France and the U.S. tech companies. That's basically my question.
I think there's a general issue between France and things that aren't France.
Oh, there we go.
Frankly.
France?
Get it? From frankly?
Yeah.
All right. On to HTC. Poor executive of HTC, not making a lot of money, but gets to hang out with Robert Downey Jr., maybe?
Yeah, there's an annual report published today by HTC itself that shows that it is paying its top executives quite a bit less than it was last year. Top executives made about $29.94 million in 2012, down 51%. From $45.18 million in 2011. So, obviously, the tide is going downward. HTC CEO Peter Chow and President of Engineering Fred Louis both saw their compensation go down under $3.3 million for the first time in 2 years. Of course, we've followed closely executive departures, product delays. The HTC First, which was the Facebook phone, really did not impress. You've got Samsung spending about 10 times the amount on marketing that HTC spends. However, HTC may be going down a different direction because people with knowledge of the plans have said actor Robert Downey Jr. has been signed for a 2-year global marketing deal worth about $12 million to help sell HTC stuff to promote
the brand.
What?
I could do some math, and it sounds like half the executive salary is close to $12 billion.
Well, yeah, exactly. HTC is saying, listen, paying our executives doesn't seem to be the answer. So maybe we get the Iron Man guy, who's also signed on for the next two Avengers, 2 and 3. That was something that Disney announced today separately. So we know that he's going to be a big face in the movies for years to come. It's going to be a big deal. And he's going to sell our phones for us.
Yeah, that's going to work. I think TCL was like a partner with Iron Man 3 and Nokia phones during the Dark Knight movies. If you have Robert Downey Jr. as your spokesman on TV, that'll work really well. You know, like Windows phones. You got Gwen Stefani in those ads, kind of like voicelessly or with a voice that isn't facelessly is actually the term I wanted to use. I don't know if a celebrity endorsement is going to do a dang thing for HTC. It's up top. It's the management. Unless they make Robert Downey Jr. the CEO, which could be pretty freaking cool.
Okay, so am I understanding this correctly in that they've got Robert Downey Jr. doing, you know, advertising for them, but not Iron Man, right?
That's correct. He'll be himself.
So
he'll
I
be
wonder
Robert
if
Downey
that has
Jr.
As
but
much
the thing is if you've ever seen a Robert Downey Jr. movie, And I'm not saying that he's a bad guy, but it's all kind of the same thing.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin.
So him
and Tony
playing
Stark.
Himself will be Iron Man or, yes, Charlie Chaplin or whatever. It's all pretty much the same character.
It will. There will definitely be a nod to Tony Stark if they use it. I mean, why wouldn't they, right?
Exactly.
Something not
because they don't
want to
get sued by Disney.
No, they won't say Iron Man or anything, but they'll make some, you know, obfuscated reference to his ability to fly or something.
Or the all aluminum construction of the HTC One. It's like it goes with what he wears.
Or
it's
they
like
do those crafty things where
man.
Or they do. Yeah, I say you know do the thing where you follow up the Robert Downey Jr. HTC ad with the next Iron Man ad. Those two commercials back to back, so that people already draw the lines.
Oh, I'm
maybe
sure
they should have him talking to the CEO of HTC, saying, "I've been a CEO. I understand what it's like." And played a CEO on TV, or something.
I'll be a figurehead CEO, kind of like the current, like Colonel Sanders kind of deal.
I mean, I think this is. I mean, this is a total desperation move. Let's just pay an actor to try to sell our stuff.
But
he is so beloved, and he's funny. And if the marketing push is successful, it would at least get HTC on everybody's minds again. Because that's the problem with HTC, right? It's not that they don't have good products. It's just they're getting buried by Samsung.
That's right. If this gets people talking about the HTC One, because they're talking about Robert Downey Jr., a.k.a. Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man. Oops, spoiler, sorry. Then, yeah, that's exactly right, Sarah. That's what HTC needs. I think you're right. Let's finish up with Microsoft secretly planning to conquer Amazon.
Yeah, so this is a canceled project. Wall Street Journal reported that Microsoft explored plans to build an Amazon competitor. Internally, they called it Project Brazil. Now, Microsoft had talks with retailers and tech companies to create a marketplace with an array of merchants and a unified shopping cart with broad shipping options. Now, Microsoft considered subsidizing the goods on the e-commerce service using a portion of advertising dollars merchants spent on Bing or elsewhere. The journal said Microsoft wanted to offer the marketplace as a part of the Windows 8, as a part of Xbox in the future, and things like that. Microsoft spokesperson even told the Wall Street Journal that, quote, Project Brazil was an incubation to enable more direct commerce model between customers and brands and merchants. So there's an actual official statement about it to the Wall Street Journal. Darren, Microsoft already has Bing Shopping and digital marketplaces, Windows stores and Windows phone stores. Would it have been really that crazy to go after Amazon?
No, I mean, this is brilliant, and this kind of like seems like it maybe would have gone really well with the entertainment platform that is the Xbox One. I mean, I think it does video games, but man, let me tell you, if it could do shopping, bring the shopping to the living room with that one-click buy experience, and then tie in your Xbox points so you don't even know how much you just spent, because what's the conversion rate again today? No, I think this would have been brilliant, and I'm kind of bummed to see Microsoft didn't do this.
This project actually would make sense why Microsoft killed that whole points thing. They wanted to have one currency for everything just to make it normal, because if you were going to buy physical goods, why would you want to do the Xbox points conversion? Although you make a great point with Xbox. If the Kinect could watch you and say, hey, your clothes look a little out of date, we can get you something better.
They could be brought to you by Stitch Fix or something, you know, just help pick new clothes for you. I think it makes perfect sense for Microsoft to consider this, and I also think it was right for Microsoft to decide not to do it. It's easier. It's not as easy as it looks.
No.
I think Amazon has a lot of experience, has made a lot of mistakes, has grown this industry in a way that Microsoft would have to acquire somebody who's at least halfway good at this. I would hate to see Microsoft try to start an online commerce delivery system. If it was just more like Bing Shopping on steroids, where you were buying directly from the retailers, maybe. But, I mean, how many times have you gotten the wrong item delivered to you from Amazon and you have to deal with customer service there?
You're right, because even Google hasn't been able to crack this. You're right. Amazon paid their dues to get to where they are today. And even as Google has their Google checkout stuff where they are, the Google shopping experience where they integrate with people that use their checkout experience, and Microsoft with the Bing shopping, it is a difficult thing to do. And so who do you think that, say, if they really wanted to, because I believe that there's a lot of money for Microsoft to make, even through just an affiliate deal, if there was that one kind of, you know, you're on your Xbox and suddenly you're like, ooh, that looks good, blink, and it shows up. Who could they partner with? Because they wouldn't want to partner with Amazon, would they? Because kind of too much competition in some of the
eBay,
other markets.
Maybe, I guess. eBay would be the next logical option.
Really? Because when I think eBay, I don't think prestigious like Microsoft.
No, but maybe eBay provides the back end then? And it's branded Microsoft? I don't know.
Does anyone find it odd that they actually made an official statement to the journal about the project that was killed? I just thought that was strange because Microsoft usually is hush-hush about what they've tried and then killed. Like the Courier was well-known.
Most companies are, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So I was just kind of confused. Why was there an actual the spokesperson was not named, but the journal said it was a spokeswoman of Microsoft saying that this is a
former spokesperson of Microsoft. No, I'm joking.
I don't think it's a former.
All right, let's fire up the randomizer. A new technique for optical storage seems to have overcome Abe's law, allowing them to store 1 petabyte on a single DVD-sized piece of optical storage. This would be of great use for big data centers. I know you're already making jokes about why would I want more DVDs? It's cloud and all that. But this scientifically is a big advance. Current nanofabrication techniques, including electron beam lithography, provide resolution in the nanometer range, but they can't build up. They can't do 3D. It quickly devolves into a lot of science speak, but essentially they're able to use three-dimensional optical beam lithography with 9 nanometer feature sizes and 52 nanometer two-line resolution to squeeze in a lot more data. Petabyte, baby!
I can't wait for this, and this is going to be on 4K movies someday, you know, on one disc. Remember when DVDs first came out, or VHS tapes, you had to get like 2 tapes to have The Godfather? Then you had the DVD, like, that's great, it can hold more data, and then you got Blu-rays, so you're getting bigger and bigger and better resolutions. I'm just thinking about this for content delivery, not necessarily storage of my own goods, because who knows how long it'll take to write a petabyte.
Won't content delivery just come over the internet?
Never underestimate the throughput of a station wagon full of backup tapes. And I see what Ayaz is saying here. Could you imagine if, say, Netflix just sent you a disc and it's like terabytes and it's just all of the movies or whatever and you just unlock the ones that you want? That would be really cool.
Netflix offline? I like that.
Well,
I think that's backward thinking. I think optical storage is going to be good for large amounts of backup data, like you say, a station wagon full of backup data, and just, you know, having a physical backup, which is always a good idea. But consumer level stuff, I'm a little skeptical about that. I know bandwidth isn't there right now. Like if we had this right now, I would agree. But by the time this comes to market, bandwidth, no matter what you think, is getting better. It just may not be getting better as fast as you want. And I don't know that we'll need this.
I think iOmega should get into the business of making these things.
iOmega.
We may not need it, but the NSA will for damn sure need this.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have stacks of these things in Utah, no doubt.
Totally.
Let's move on to the calendar.
The Mobile Asia Expo starts on June 26th. And Sony's already sort of hinting it will have a smartwatch to show off. There's actually a tweet from the Sony Xperia Twitter account that said, 1 in 3 smartphone users want smart wristwear. Hashtag it's time. Hashtag MAA13.
Oh, I see what they did with this watch and it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
I'm still not getting it. Right. There's a what now?
I mean, if they don't have a watch, I think there'll be a lot of people just being like, okay, weird tweets. Sony also says that it'll fix unusable PlayStation 3 software with a patch coming on June 27th. Good news for those of you who fall into that category. And LG is hosting an event in New York City on August 7th. We don't know what it is about yet, but rumors might be that Optimus G that has the Snapdragon 800 system on a chip.
Finally, I'm a little hesitant to check what's incoming because it might make you cry.
Oh.
Incoming message.
Yeah, the subject line from John here. This is an email from John. Subject line, Brian Brushwood made me cry. I was brought to tears of sadness by the apparent defense of Microsoft's mostly on internet-connected Xbox and their recent 180. He suggested that in the future we would regret the backlash and the 180 Microsoft made. I don't believe the future it presented was the future we wanted. The form of always on and control over purchases was not an acceptable form. It is a great thing the 180 happened. The best reason why it gives Microsoft or someone else a chance to develop a different approach, an approach that is acceptable and is in the future a better future. Don't think of it as a loss, but rather a chance to get it right. Thanks for the show.
You know what, John? I think when you put it that way, I agree with you. Because I was sort of halfway down that road anyway, saying I didn't like the restrictions, but I also think going optical, as I just said, going back to discs is kind of a step backwards, but maybe that's it. It's like they did it wrong. Now's a chance to do it right. Will they, though? I don't know. We'll see. That is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Darren Kitchen, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. I am very excited to be here at the Manor. What are we calling it? The Manor? The house. Tom's house. Anyway, I'm really excited because tomorrow Hacker Across America is taking on the California Science Center. We've got a tour of the Space Shuttle Endeavor, and I encourage everybody in the area to come out. It's meeting at noon at the California Science Center, and then we're moving on to Crash Space, the hacker space, to do a little hangout there. And then the after party is at Rush, and we've got free drinks and other fun things going on there. And if anybody's in even more south of here in San Diego and wants to hang out, we're getting a little shindig going on the Saturday the 29th at the Model Train Museum in Balboa Park. So hackacrossamerica.com for all of the details on LA and San Diego.
Absolutely. Check it out. I will be there. I will see you tomorrow at noon, my friend.
Woohoo!
And don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place to let us know what stories you'd like us to cover. Submit them, vote them up, vote them down, put comments, sing to them. It won't show up on the website, but it'll maybe make you feel better. Also, don't forget best of submissions. If any show on Twit has a great moment that you're like, this should go into the best of episode at the end of the year, go to twit.tv/best of. Tell us all you can remember about that moment, and we'll try to get it in there for you. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back Monday with all new tech news, all new show, and an all new David Spark as our guest. We'll see you then.